I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The following program is brought to you by the Preferred Home Team. Content is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal or real estate advisors. Welcome to the Real Estate Radio Hour, a forum of ideas, plans, and expert advice on all things real estate. Andy Prasky with RE/MAX Advantage Plus was named Super Agent by Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine. Chris Rooney of RE/MAX Preferred is a Lakeshore and Luxury Home Specialist. Together, they cover the Twin Cities. This combined dynamic duo has sold over 2,000 homes, ranked in the top 1% nationwide, top 10 in the state of Minnesota, and still have time to get together every Saturday to talk about real estate. Here's Abby Prasky and Chris Rooney, Denny Long, and the Real Estate Radio Hour.
As we're back at it on this Saturday, we're always welcoming your real estate-related questions by phone and by text, as usual. Before we say hello, let's give you those numbers, 651-989-9226. Text number is 81807. Good morning to you, Chris and Andy. I know you brought some friends with you.
Good morning.
Today, can I ask how the week was? Now, we've had some varying weather conditions this week. Did that affect the business a little bit?
Andrew, what do you think?
You know, I think it does, but it's there's a lot of people who hit the first of the year, and they want to get things rolling. They want to get, you know, that to-do, that house sold, that new house purchased, or at least the decision process started. So I see a lot of online activity. We're starting to see a lot of, when the weather's not impeding the showings, we're seeing a real healthy amount of showings that are out there. Even on some of our new construction stuff this last week, everything was really high. So for quantity of showings, which is good. So that's when they get busy, everybody gets busy.
Yeah, and things we've been it's been interesting because we've been doing a lot of things that are under 300,000 lately, and it's that craziness again of trying to, you know, get in there, get it written right away, get it presented, and then it's the wait game because everyone's kind of waiting you out now. So it's interesting, but some of the bigger stuff too, getting a lot more showings, getting a lot of second showings. So hopefully people are ready to start moving. So
how about newcomers in the business? Are you guys as real estate agents still looking for newcomers?
I sure am. I don't know about Chris. I don't know.
I don't want realtors.
No, but you know what? I love people that are from other industries that try to get into real estate, that bring a fresh perspective.
Sure.
And then, you know, the biggest thing I'd say is if they have the work ethic where they actually are willing to put the effort in, the motivation is hard to teach, right? You can always teach the other stuff to go with it, but the motivation is the key thing there. And then people that love to service people. I always say the people that are in the service industry, the actual bartenders, you know, servers, whatever, that do really well because they already have that right perspective on how to treat the client, you know, serve and provide information. And it works out well for some of those folks.
Yeah, I think what people need to remember, though, when you do come into this industry, you do have to keep working during the day. Mm-hmm. And then usually you got to go with your clients at night. So
what do you think the average ramp up time is for a new agent? I mean, what would you tell someone to allow?
I mean, to,
if you had money in the bank,
wage?
Yeah, to get on your feet and actually where you can actually say yes.
I'd say between 2 and 3 years.
Yep.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, if you make it past a year, you know, half in, half out, that's what happens. I mean, they're transferring in and out all the time. So,
well, at the time you're doing well in real estate, you're about to get ready from your existing job because they're ready to fire you because you're so focused on the new one. And
I think, too, people have a hard time with, you know, even if you get in the business and you're lucky enough to maybe sell something in your first 3 months, I mean, you don't get paid till that closes. So you might not get paid until 6 months down the line.
Well, which is also very nice for, like we've said this before, too, with new recruits that, you know, you sell new construction and it's a 6-7 month build cycle. What's nice is you know what your income is 6 or 7 months down the road. So what's nice is that you can start building your portfolio and you know, and it's kind of nice to know that that is coming in the future, you know, for budgeting.
I think the other thing is a lot of people get into this business because they think they're going to go out and make money in it, not from selling, but by making money off of real estate, whether it's buying it and renting it. and or, you know, doing flips and stuff like that. But I think if people are thinking that to go into the real estate industry to be able to do that, I would not get my license at that point because we have a lot of ethical things that we have to stand by. So if I'm going out to try to buy a house, I have to basically tell that person, hey, I'm going to try to steal this from you and make money from you. You know, right. If you're not licensed, you don't have to, you know, you don't
have to. Well, you bring up the interesting argument I've been having several times this week with people that are, there's some new industry people coming into the business where they're licensed in the state of Minnesota, but they're not actually members of the National Association of Realty. So they're not realtors and they're not following the what we call the code of ethics, which is what Chris is talking about there. The code of ethics is something that we follow where we vow to take care of our customers. We have fiduciary responsibilities. And sometimes those that are licensed in real estate don't – they may be nice people, but they're not necessarily committed to the same vow of ethics that, or the ethics that we are, code of ethics. And so that's to take care of the customer first, tell them what their house is really worth first, and take care of them first before ourselves. And so it's –
how do you know if a person is one or the other?
Ask.
And they'll tell you.
Sure. I mean, there's a lot of companies that are out there right now that they position themselves – this is an interesting argument to be had with the state – they position themselves as being real estate companies when they're not. They're actually contractors that are wearing the coat or the hood of a real estate agent. We'll come out and make you an offer. We'll give you a guaranteed offer. We'll do the – and there's a lot of gray area there right now that I don't think is being addressed. And until somebody complains about it or feels like they've been taken, nobody will do anything. So it's you know – anyway, back
we've
to
been,
business.
Yeah, we've been gathering information on that, and we're going to have a show on that too.
Oh, absolutely.
Just to make sure that you know it all gets out there. So, you know, Travis Whitford is here with Mr. Bay Equity. And how about you for people getting into that in the mortgage industry? Are we getting lighter there or are people starting to come in? And how long does it take for a person to get ramped up in that?
As far as, you know, getting really accustomed to, you know, getting good at loans, same as real estate, you know, I say about 2 years or so. A lot of times mortgage companies, they don't necessarily have quite the time to give the training needs that are needed for somebody that's brand new into the industry. So a lot of times new loan officers get their start at banks where they can get a better feel for the whole overall banking process and have might have a little bit more assistance with the process. But, you know, this day and age, like we're not – I'm personally not seeing a ton of new blood. The new blood is coming from – banks, loan officers that work at banks and want a better opportunity.
Or just like in real estate, I see a lot of the loan officers joining teams and then they're working as teams. There's one, you know, person that'll take all the applications and then they're assigning the files to the individual agents, the loan officers.
Yes. And that is like arguably the best way to get a new loan officer and come in come in and team up with a good loan officer that has a lot of business and just help out and learn slowly because it's an ever-changing industry. And, you know, what's rules today is not rules tomorrow. And, you know, to be able to have that guidance there and that mentor is huge.
For sure.
But does a loan officer get paid based on a commission or do they get, I mean, are they getting a salary or kind of
Travis,
a combination?
There's no exactly what you get paid. I mean, typically you get paid a percentage of the loan amount. There's no such thing as variable compensation in the mortgage world here these days. You know, so whatever your loan sizes, you're set up on a comp plan where you get a percentage of that loan. Now, sometimes people will have a salary as they're coming up, a smaller salary for a little bit, and a smaller commission plan. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of ways to do that, but essentially, like variable comp, where you know I can make either this or this on the same loan size, it doesn't work that way anymore. That was a lot of the changes with the whole Frank Dodd stuff after the mortgage meltdown.
Yeah. But I think it's important that people do know how we get paid and how much you get paid and what you do to do that. Because truly, I mean, not only do you take in the, you know, the experience of that agent, you know, that's been doing it for a while. You know, there's a lot of time that you're actually doing it. And everyone thinks, oh, boy, you got paid that big dollar amount based on just, you know, selling that one house. But it doesn't sell and close on the same day and we get paid. You know, and then typically you have other people you got to pay and your brokerage gets paid. So it's split up in a lot of different ways.
And marketing dollars and everything else. I think that's the part that a lot of times people get confused on is they don't understand how to shop real estate agents or loan officers because they think that you can get gouged with a discount, you know, listing agent. You can get gouged with a discount, you know, loan officer. And it comes down to what value are you getting for what they're providing you. And sometimes the equation's better to go with the experience with the more, you know, the robust marketing plan, for an example, may cost you a few more dollars. But if your bottom line is higher, I think that's the ultimate goal of most sellers, is to get the highest bottom line possible for themselves.
Danny, we're going to talk a little Wisconsin real estate today. Travis Kallstrom with RE/MAX Advantage Plus is going to be on. Nick Rooney's on the text messages again. And Travis Whitford, Bay Equity, is going to be here and talking some credit scores as well.
And as usual, we welcome your not only text messages, but phone calls too, 651-989-9226. Text is 81807. And good morning. Welcome back to our real estate show around every Saturday here in the 10 o'clock hour. It's 5 above 0. Chris and Andy in studio along with a couple of Travises.
Yeah.
Where do we go from here?
Well, Travis Kallstrom is one of those Travises. He also, not only is he licensed in Minnesota, but he's also licensed in Wisconsin. We wanted kind of, you know, Wisconsin actually, is, I mean, obviously it's real close. And a lot of people kind of on that east end are kind of switching over and flopping over the river. A lot of those Packer fans should stay over there.
That's just right. Build the wall, right?
My opinion. Yeah, right. Don't say that.
Wrong argument.
Yeah, don't say that. Yeah. So now you lost me.
The fun is on the other side of the wall.
Is it?
Remember? I got a feeling you bring a whole new version of showing cabins to your customers.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's been a time or two that it's been done on a pontoon and on a snowmobile. And, you got to show them how to live the dream.
I talk a lot about lifestyle living. And, I mean, I think Wisconsin, that's a big thing out there. And the cool thing is it's just not that far from the Twin Cities. I mean, even for a cabin, I'm actually with one of Andy's agents, Nathaniel Pettis, doing a co-marketing. We're kind of marketing from Minnesota because, I mean, obviously, if you're just around the border, Prescott. But it's amazing. I mean, it's a log cabin, sits on 3 acres, overlooks the old big river valley. I mean, a log home, you know. And in the 600s.
You missed the screen footage. No.
You want to know? Let me see. About 4,000 some? Yeah. But we'll talk more about it because
I'm sure we will.
But, you know, it is close, but you get a lot more land for the money as well.
That's correct. Yeah. You know, that's a lot of our clientele that they want to live on the east side for whatever reason, you know, that maybe they work at 3M. They could be Wisconsin-based originally. You know, I'm from the western side of Wisconsin, and a lot of times people don't want to cross the river, and they just find more value in like Hudson or Prescott or any of those kind of river towns. So, you know, I think it is just that, you know, it's that your roots are there, so you like to kind of keep it over there, and you're willing to make that commute in.
What would you say the advantages are from living on our east side versus going into Wisconsin, Hudson, Prescott, those areas? What would you say, tell a buyer if you're looking and they're saying, hey, why wouldn't we just go live on the Wisconsin side?
Some of the benefits of Minnesota is, you know, the property taxes tend to be quite a bit lower in, you know, Woodbury versus Hudson. So sometimes the price of the home could be offset by the tax base being higher. So even though you're paying a little bit more for your property in Woodbury because the land being more expensive, you're not, you know, when you look at the way that the monthly payment shakes out, it ends up being a kind of a lateral. Although it's more, again, kind of back to that lifestyle, you're not going to get that log home or that, you know, 2-3 acre larger home site in for $325,000 in Woodbury. The land just isn't available. So that really is what drives the market. You know, they want to spread out a little bit. And, you know, the school systems are in Hudson are fantastic. You know, like people that like myself growing up in good old Ellsworth, Wisconsin, the cheese curd capital. You know, the people want those smaller schools and because that's where they're from. So yet they want the modern conveniences and of whatever Target right, you know, in the cities, and their jobs are here. So
cool.
Yeah, that cheese is good in Ellsworth.
It's unbelievable.
We had a wedding facility listed at one time in there. They ended up just selling off a bunch of the land, but what I mean, just such neat. And I'll tell you what, I've always wanted a Red Barn.
Oh,
I want a red barn. There's a lot of red barns out there.
I can sell you one.
I know.
Yeah.
But I think,
I'll just sell you the wood, actually.
I think, too. I mean, I looked at that.
Yeah. And the cheese curds.
Hey, that wood's expensive, too.
Oh, that barn wood. I mean, that's a pretty big deal these days.
It's a huge thing. So, but anyways, I also look at it, too. Is that really just across the river and stuff like that? I mean, because what it does, it looks like cabin. I mean, you've got the rivers down there. I mean, it's you could literally have a cabin, second home type thing just across the river. I mean, what are we, 35, 50 minutes from the airport? You know, yeah. I don't know about Ellsworth. Ellsworth's
a little
further.
Let's talk about cabins, because I think I always think of Wisconsin for the recreational fun stuff, too. And I mean, let's talk. I mean, what is the you would say your average cabin? Describe it to us and give us a little insight on what you think the average price would be to start at to get into that kind of a market.
Well, that's a really interesting conversation because, you know, people tend to have their, you know, the quintessential cabin, the cabin that, you know, the chalet, you know, the water skiing full recreational lake, and you know they'll call me up and, hey, Travis, I know you guys have a cabin and blah, 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 and we'd like to spare. And then, you know, they get all excited about it, and they're like, oh, I want to buy a cabin. Well, the first thing that I do is kind of assess the full situation and think to myself, all right, you live in a $500,000 house. Well, the equation typically is, well, I want to spend $250,000 on my second house. Unfortunately, that's not the equation that works. If you live in a $500,000 house, you're looking for a $500,000 cabin because you want the full recreation. You want to be able to hunt. You want to be able to fish. You want to be able to host plenty of people. And unfortunately, you know, half the price of the home that you currently live in, you're not going to be satisfied because it's going to have, you know, you got to look at the water quality. Mm-hmm. You got to look at the size of the lake. You know, you got to look at
What you can do on that lake.
What you can do on the lake. Is
motorized boats or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, do you want to swim? Do you want what do you want to do with the lake? Is it a shallow lake? Is it a spring-fed lake? You know, you got to look at all of the big picture on it. And the bottom line is it's all about the lake shore. Just like, you know, it is
around here.
It is around mm-hmm. here. You know, it's mm-hmm. you're going to pay a premium price. So, you know, buying the cabin, it's not about the cabin. It's about the lake. Always. And then the best deals are really teardowns or something that you can convert from a three-season cabin to a four-season cabin. Those older cabins are on the prime lakeshore.
And so what do you – I mean, just to put you on the spot again, yeah. what do you throw out there for an allowance for something like that? I mean, and on that recreational lake with a couple restaurants you can go to, float to, nice water, nice lakeshore, I mean, the lot start at?
$200,000.
Okay.
I would say if you're within 2 hours of the Twin Cities, and that's what, you know, kind of the magic number is that people want to be 2 hours to Minneapolis and they, you know, want that full recreation, blah, blah, blah. Okay. I would say, and it's measured on linear foot. So you're 100-foot wide lot, $2,000. Mm-hmm. The more premium lakes, $3,000 a foot. Mm-hmm. And it's very uncommon to find a conforming lot under.
Wow. We're going to talk some credit next.
All right, we'll do that.
And then text after that.
Yeah, text and call us if you have a real estate type of question for sure. And good morning. Welcome back to the Real Estate Show here on CSUA. You have a question? Call it in or text it in 651-989-9226. Text is 81807. Chris and Andy, for those joining us a little bit late, who did you bring with you today?
Travis Whitford, Bay Equity, Travis Kallstrom, Remax Advantage Plus, Nick Rooney, who's got a nice suit on. He looks better than all of us, you guys. And Mr. Andy Kraske over there.
Thank you.
All right, text question.
You have a text there, Nick?
Yeah, we're getting a lot of good text messages. Here's one. Can you tell a client why their offer was not accepted when buying a house other than just saying they took another offer?
Okay, first of all, I think if it's your client and you know something, you've got to tell your client. You know, but I think what they're trying to say is that if me and my client made an offer, and that can that agent tell us, hey, we just accepted another offer, or can they tell us more?
Well, yeah, I mean, especially when you're in multiples as a listing agent, you don't want to divulge what terms you're working with because what'll happen is it'll get used against you, or you're going to have this, which is interesting because we talked about this in Wisconsin. you can negotiate with multiple offers at the same time versus in Minnesota, we usually choose to work with one offer at a time and then exhaust that offer, then go to the next offer. But in Wisconsin, it's we can work with multiples at one time, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, what I think is interesting too, Andy, is on that is that you don't ever want to tell someone later because that deal can always fall through. You know,
right.
So you always, I mean, if I'm representing my client, I want to keep everything close to my chest on that, not just say something to try to make someone feel better.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, most people say, hey, highest and best is due today. That's a total psychology move. You assume that everybody high and best means that everybody's above asking price. Everybody's, and I've had highest and best on bank-owned properties I've listed where they're all under list price. So it's a lot of it's positioning, right? Same thing is that, hey, we're going to work with this other offer, assuming that they paid more money. So when they come back and say, hey, the other offer fell through, we'd like to work with you guys. You assume that you have to come in higher again because that, you know, or whatever. So it's playing poker. So what I always say to people is do your homework, make sure that you understand what you're buying, and then write your offer for what you really think it's worth and stick to it.
Mr. Whitford is in here to talk about the importance of a credit score, first of all. I mean, obviously very important based on what your credit is. Travis Kallstrom was talking about, you know, taxes being higher over in Wisconsin, and maybe the prices are smaller. But, I mean, taxes are one factor in that payment being higher. But if a bad credit score, that's going to be a big factor too.
Well, yeah. I mean, the two most important pieces of the pie for a mortgage is credit and income. And credit is essentially your gateway. You know, if you don't have the necessary credit score, you're not going to get a loan no matter what your income is, you know. But on the flip side, you know, you can't have the greatest credit score and just think you can do everything if you can't afford it and stuff like that. So, and also, you know, credit obviously determines how good of an interest rate that you get too. I mean, top of the food chain credit scores will get the best interest rates. And if you're not there, there's going to be price adjustments that factor your interest rate.
In your professional opinion, what is a good credit score nowadays?
In the mortgage world, yes. Anytime you're over 740, you get the best mortgage rates. And then mortgage insurance, if you put in less than 20% down in the conventional market, that credit score also determines that. And to get the best mortgage insurance rates, mm-hmm. you want to be a 760. So anytime you're mid-700s or above is...
So what's the lowest credit score you can have and still be eligible to buy a home?
Conventional minimum credit score is 620. FHA, we go down to 580. Now, I think there's some other lenders out there. I don't know how much locally will do less than 580 credit scores for like FHA loans. But I believe with the sub 580 credit score, it's a 10% down. And
sure.
Most of the time.
Well, rightfully so. Yeah. I mean, with that score, you probably it's a risk-reward thing, right? So
yeah. I mean, to get to that type of score, let's just talk about that. To get to a 580 credit score, what have you done? You just got too much credit or you're missing payments?
No,
or
it's typically late payments, multiple late payments, high revolving balances on your credit cards. You know, maybe you got collections, charge-offs, repossessions, old foreclosures or short sales. I mean, you name it, you know. And sometimes, you know, maybe if you have very limited credit history, just one or two lates can really damage your score versus somebody that has a great length of credit history and they have an isolated late or two. It might not affect the score hardly at all.
So say I'm a listener and I shock when I have a lower score than I thought I had. What can I do? What are some key things that I can do to my credit by myself without spending a lot of money with, you know, a credit rehab person or something like that I could do to get that credit score up?
Yeah, the biggest quick fix for any sort of quick credit improvement is attacking your revolving debt. So meaning, all your credit cards. A lot of times people have low credit limits and that credit card is like almost maxed out. So the whole credit scoring algorithms looks at the percentage of balance owed in relationship to that limit. So the number one thing to get quick boost to credit scores is to get your revolving balances paid down. And there's the whole 50, 30, 10% rule. Mm-hmm. You know, ideally, you kind of want to carry a revolving balance of about 10% of your limit. Next best is 30% of the limit. Third best, 50% of the limit. So when you start getting over 50% of the limit, there's a downward spiral.
So if I'm hearing you right, just get my credit rate or my allowance or balances raised so that I have more credit,
right.
And then I look better.
And that's another thing, too. Yeah. You can always request, you know, to have credit
higher
increases.
Credit limit.
You know, but that's the number one thing. A lot of times people, too, think, you know, I want to get these, you know, I got an old collection or charge-off. I want to get these taken care of. You know, typically we don't really care too much about collections and charge-offs. I mean, the damage has already been done at the score. A lot of times when you have this old collection out there and now you want to pay it off, you know, it might actually have an immediate negative impact on your credit score, because once you pay it off and it re-reports that it paid off, it kind of brings that collection account a little more recent, and it'll factor in. And, you know, and charge-offs, I mean, lenders already charged off that debt, you know. So now there can be instances where you might be required to pay some of that stuff off for closing, but not typically to get approved, you know, to get pre-qualified. Do you want to necessarily make sure you take care of that beforehand?
There's a text that kind of is with that, and it's talked about FICO scores that you find, like, on your Discover card.
Yeah.
Are those real? Could I rely on that to be able to know that I'm going to be able to get a good mortgage?
Not for a mortgage, no. It's like you got to beware of what's, quote unquote, the fake credit scores. So, you know, a lot of these credit monitoring services, they're kind of going off a different algorithm, credit scoring algorithm. Mortgages use the true FICO algorithm, which is it chooses all three credit bureaus, and we use the middle credit score of the two. So, like, you know, Credit Karma is kind of the big thing out there, and I've seen that thing be off by as much as 100 points in any direction. You know,
100 points?
Yeah, in both
directions. But it's free, Travis.
It's free, you know.
you get what you pay for,
likes you do on Facebook.
You know, I mean, yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, essentially, you know, there's different algorithms, and, you know, it's not real.
All right, we're going to come back with some text questions.
All right.
We're going to talk maybe a little VRBO thing in Wisconsin, how to get that cabin.
Cool. We'll do that. If you want to call in your question, 651-989-9226, or send us a text, 81807. 5 above 0 here in the Twin Cities, back with more of our real estate show here on CCO. If you have a question, call it in or text it in. If you're just joining us, Chris and Andy in here. Where do we go from here, guys?
Yeah.
Another question. What is a lien on someone's house?
A lien. Okay. There could be a lot of things, but it's anything that's attached to that home that is a debt that would have to be paid off at closing.
Or judgment anything or any other incumbents.
Yeah, judge. I mean, a loan
mortgage,
is a lien.
Home equity,
a mortgage.
Mechanics.
Home equity
loan. Yep, anybody that worked on the house that didn't get paid.
Next.
A weekly listener asked this last week, so he asked it again this week, so we get to it. We have 4 beds up. But bath for 3 beds, bedrooms only has 1 sink. Should we put in 2 sinks? Is it worth it? And it's a 1980s golden oak home.
I like how they described that. We've seen many of those.
So if I understood the question, they want to know in the bathroom they're remodeling with 1 bathroom up?
Yep.
They want to know, should we do a double vanity?
I think there's 3 bedrooms that share 1 bathroom. Should they do a double vanity?
Oh, of course, yeah. And that would also put up a wall, a divider wall between the toilets and the shower and the vanity, so that you can actually have multi-people using it at the same time.
Then it's add a four-season porch.
Almost like a Jack and Jill or whatever you want to call it.
Yep. No, I'm kidding.
And a what?
Add a four-season porch onto that.
And a water slide. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Hey, Travis Kallstrom, Remax Advantage Plus. He's dual licensed, Wisconsin and Minnesota. You got a little trick for your clients that you get. It works for you. What is it? How to be able to get that cabin and maybe not have to cost so much?
That's right. Yeah, I got a couple of well-kept secrets. First of all, if you already own your own property, investment property or lake home, you may as well leverage that asset. And for me, you know, working in real estate, I work a lot during the week and the evenings, and just like anybody else, you spend Monday through Friday at home and you use your cabin only on the weekends. So a while back I thought, you know, I see this Airbnb, I see this VRBO, and I didn't know what it was all about. So I went on and I thought, you know, I'm really curious, will people rent Sunday through Friday? And shockingly, I put it out there, took some real estate professional photography, and you'd be surprised at how many people take week-long vacations, and they don't necessarily care that it's Saturday and Sunday, which is when I'm using it. So when I leave, which I leave it a mess because I might have had a couple of brewskis on the pontoon and not really feel like cleaning it before I leave, and we just have our cleaners come in, they change the beds, we leave at noon, the new people check in at 3, and we're taking in $15 to $2,000 between Sunday night and Friday morning. We show up. Guess what? It's clean. And all I got to do is put gas in the boat.
So you're saying, I mean, you're making anywhere from $5,000 to $6,000 a month?
So the payment's basically being made by somebody else, and you're getting to enjoy it.
Yeah, more than enough. It's also paying for all the toys.
And you get to still enjoy it when you want to use it.
We are. In fact, we bought a second property because of this.
Hmm.
So, when you're willing to also give up the weekends, and you know, if you're a planner or you got kids in hockey or sports or whatever, baseball is a big one in the summer, clearly. You already kind of know your weekends that you're not going to be up there. So if you can plan out your blocks of time, you can definitely cash flow these properties.
Travis Whitford, how can I use that for qualifying?
Depends. It depends on if you have history of rental.
So Travis's experience, the other Travis's experience doing
actually,
it, he could.
You could use it on an existing property and you're writing off or you're claiming that income, but on a new buy investment property and you say you're going to use VBRO or VRBO or Airbnb income, you can't because there's not enough history. The only type of rental income that you can use on an investment property at the time you buy it is you have to sign lease.
In a way, too, it's better to be able to qualify that. You know that you're going to be able to afford it and then supplement it with your VRBO income.
Is the bank appraised value generally the most you'll be able to sell a home or property for?
What do you think, Andy?
I'd say no.
No.
I've seen it where, you know, when you have cash buyers, it's worth what the buyer's willing to pay. And if they're paying cash, the bank's opinion doesn't matter in that situation.
In the end, I mean, it is what a seller's willing to accept and what a buyer's willing to pay. And the appraisal is to justify what that is for the bank.
Yeah. I mean, if you have like a borrower with limited down payment funds, I mean, it's going to affect the potential to buy that house. But, you know, if you got extra funds to support the difference.
That's why when you're a listing agent, when you actually go into a house where you're concerned about hitting the peak of the market, like you might be the fanciest house on the street. You know that that's coming. So when an offer comes in with 2%, 3%, whatever down, you may pass on that offer knowing that you're going to have a struggle versus the buyer that comes in and says, hey, we're 30% down. The bank's happy with their 20 and 10% goes towards the seller for over the appraised value and everybody's happy.
Yeah. So then a lot of times maybe that low down payment might be the highest offer. And like, you know, Chris and you have always said, the highest offer isn't necessarily the best offer.
The best offer is one that closes.
You know, I wanted to go back to that 80s golden oak home, too, and talk about – well, no, but I mean, I think there's a simple little thing that we've had people do that makes a huge difference. So even if you didn't do that double sink at that point, that golden oak, paint that vanity and get some new – if you want to do it all. But then they'll look at that bathroom as that it's more updated and it'll look bigger. And maybe they'll kind of overlook that sink.
We've even had people do the newer doors where they'll get the 6-panel or the, you know, the 5-panel, even some of those cool 5-panel doors. And they'll do that with a different species of wood. And then they enamel all the golden oak to white, which is kind of what the builders are doing. Put some, you know, solid surface countertops down. And then all of a sudden, boom, you have a beautiful, very relevant style-wise home to sell.
That's very true. I mean, we run into that a lot. And I'm telling you, typically, your 80s golden oak home is also sitting on a real nice mature lot, which people want. But what they start doing is saying, gosh, but I could build over there with zero trees on it, but look at this. So if you can give them a little of that, then they start justifying it.
I've even had some of those properties where you overlook the oak because, for the example, that the way they've decorated the home makes it work, right? Versus the vacant home that's sitting there and it's exposed and it actually – then they notice those things more prevalently than if it's a, you know, staged home that actually makes it work for the house.
Got a couple comments here. I've trained 3 new appraisers over the last 4 years, and none of them are still in the career. I think that happens. Sometimes people get their appraisers get stuck in and where they're doing them for really inexpensive.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, and I'm not sure the rules either, but there's a lot of hours like new appraisers have to log before they get the certification, and a lot of the appraisers don't necessarily want to take somebody under their wing to – give them those hours to get their certification.
Hmm.
What are you pointing at me for?
I was holding up the one finger.
Oh, that 1 minute left?
It says, I love you,
yeah,
brother.
Do you want to make a mention, because we did talk about the Wisconsin stuff, that log cabin that I was talking about.
Yeah.
In Aspen Creek. There is an open house today. Nathaniel Pettis, Remax Advantage Plus, will be out there. It's from 12 to 3. So just go a little east on Highway 10, take it right on 1090th, and you're going to see something pretty cool.
Guys, why don't you give us quick how people can find you or if they want to get on that cabin list where you
gotta
have
go
those.
Quick.
Gotta go quick.
Yeah, my website is travisandandlaura.com.
Nice.
travismnloans.com. But I do service Wisconsin too, so.
Yeah, you do loans in Wisconsin as well.
Prasky.com for me, and yep. What's yours?
What is mine?
Peanutbutterandjelly.com.
Donuts. No, ChrisFruity.com.
Okay. Are we going to do this again next week if they let us?
Not with you.
Well, we'll see.
All right. Thank you, guys. Thanks all for joining us today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.